ministry from scratch, and also more on team evangelism and personal evangelism. I want to know which area is more of interest for you. Are you more into how to start a small group from scratch? Is that why you're here? Are you more into personal evangelism and some creative ways for that? And the rest of you aren't sure why you're here, but you're here, and I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Pardon?
Both okay.
Both is okay. Hey, that's a good answer. That's a very good answer. Okay. I would like you all to have a handout. Would you help me there, Matt? Thank you very much. Later on, we're going to have some case studies. We're going to break up into small groups and let you kind of apply all of this in a real-life situation, okay? But I would like you to get some practical handles on starting small groups, on hanging out with your non-Christian friends, and encourage you to do that. We're calling this developing a contagious ministry lifestyle. We want your lifestyle to be contagious and rub off onto the people around you. People need to belong before they believe. I got this quote from Carl Nyquist, who is a colleague of mine in Glasgow, Scotland, working with university students. And he said, people need a sense of community. They need to feel like they belong to your group before they believe. So based on that, when we have a party, if I have an investigative outreach Bible study that I'm doing, am I the only one that can bring chips, or do you have to be a Christian to bring chips? No. Am I the only one that can think of party themes, or could I ask the people in my group, hey, what kind of a party do you want to have? They go, a fondue night. Oh, okay, I don't know anything about fondue. Stefan, who is not a believer, who maybe is an atheist, do you know about fondue? Would you like to organize our fondue night? Why does it have to be the Christians that organize the fondue night? They belong to our group without being a Christian. You see what I'm saying? They're a part of our community. People need, how can I introduce them to Jesus, my best friend, but they don't really know me that well? Or they know me, but they don't know four or five other Christians well. So if they can't be a good friend with a Christian that they can see and who's living and breathing on the earth, how can they become a good friend with Jesus that they can't see? You see? So I need to build that bridge. I need to let them belong to a group of Christians in the community before they will believe. And that's generally how it's going to happen for them. The best prepared fisher without a pond and without fish won't catch a thing. You can go to all your little workshops on evangelism, and, you know, you're just like a fisherman that comes in. I got my pole, and I got my bait box, and I got my ice chest to put the fish in, and I got my little vest with all the little, you know, the little hooks, you know, you put them on there, and you got the bait, and you're so prepared. You're like, let's go. And you go, wow, I've gone to so many seminars, I'm ready to fish. Because Matthew 4:19 says, come follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you to become fishers of men, or I will make you fishers of men. So Jesus says, hey, I'm doing the work for you. I will make you to become a fisherman. You don't have to work hard on that. I will help you. I will make you become a fisherman. I don't think it's possible for a Christian to be walking with God, to be following Jesus, because he said, come follow me, and you not to see people coming to Christ. Does that mean that you personally are going to be the one to pray with them or right when they're there to make that decision? No. But I'm going to be one of the people in that network, in my team. I'm going to be a link in the chain as people are coming to Christ. So I'm all prepared and ready to fish. And you go, great, where's your pond? Well, I don't really know where a pond is. Oh, well, I do know a pond, but there's no fish in it. It's all kind of been fished out. Oh, really? Well, I compare the fish, and I learned this. By the way, I learned a lot of this stuff from my BSU or from Hope Community Church in Fort Worth, so I don't take credit for this. So I cannot fish unless there's fish and there's a pond. But that's how Christians get. We get so involved, and we got training, and we got our tracks or whatever, but we don't know any non-believers. And so we say, well, I don't really know any non-believers, but I'm ready, and I want to encourage you and give you some keys to help you connect with people that need Jesus Christ. Okay. So imagine that in your ministry, the lives that you come in contact with are like a pond. So here's my pond, and these represent people around my life. I may be the only one, hopefully not the only one, that's a Christian that's around their life. And these are the people. I want you to draw right now in that pond at the bottom of your page. Draw, write down names of 3, 4, 5 people that you say, you know, I really feel like for my friends, for my family, for my cousin back home, from, I don't know, my letter carrier. These are some people, someone on my dorm or my floor. I feel like these are some people that don't know Jesus yet. God specifically put them around my life. Write down the names of 3, 4, or 5 of those people. Okay, so how do you meet or find these people, these fish, that are ready for Christ? If you're trying to reach your neighborhood, or your city. You know, God may put you somewhere overseas and you're a city strategist. If you're trying to reach a dorm, if you're trying to reach just your family, how do you find people that you can intentionally take steps with to say, I'm going to help them, take them from step one to knowing Christ? God has big intentions for your life. Matthew 28, 19 and 20 does not say go and make disciples. Did you know that? Y'all probably know that. It does not say go and make disciples. It says in the Greek, while you're going, as you're going. It's assuming that you're going. I'm going to the store. I'm going to the lamp store. I'm going to the post office. I'm going to Germany. I'm going on the plane to Florida. I'm going to OU. I'm going. As you're going, make disciples. The only imperative, the only command is to make disciples. So God's assuming you're going. You're in movement. You're on your way somewhere. And while you're doing that, be looking for those opportunities. There are no accidents in your life, so take the initiative when God puts things in front of your face. Some live their life just like their non-believing friends. You know, God is something that happens at church or at BSU or at Freshman Encounter, but I don't really think about him being involved in the little intricacies, the little details of my life, but he is at work in the normal activities of our lives. Who sits next to you in class? Well, you know, it just happened to be some girl. No. There's a purpose why that girl is sitting next to you in class. Who is your next door neighbor? I don't know. These people just moved in. Like, I just had some people move in. That's not an accident. I know. I just think automatically, there's a reason why they're my neighbors. I wonder why that is. How can I sow the gospel in their life? Okay. And I assume that God is bringing not only people into my life. Okay, that wasn't an accident. Someone's in my life. He's bringing people on my ministry pond who already are seeking him, who already some way have or are going to have a longing for God and will recognize that. Because I have some verses I'd like us to read. Maybe some of you all could go ahead and look them up and just have your little bookmark there. Acts 17, 26 to 28. Who would look up that one and read it later? Okay? Thank you. Acts 17, 26 to 28. How about Ephesians 2, 1 and 2? Thank you. Ephesians 2, 1 and 2. How about 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 24? Good. Courtney? 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 24. How about 2 Corinthians 5? Who could do that one? Ben? 2 Corinthians 5, verse 11 and verse 14. 11 and 14. Okay, that's a good start. Okay. So I'm watching for the opportunities. Let's see what Paul said to the people in Athens. Acts 17, 26 through 28.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might grope for him and find him, though he is not that far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and exist, and even some of your own poets have said, for we are also his children.
Thank you. So he says, you know, God is the creator of the universe, and he created people. And these people he created that they would seek him. People are seeking for God. They would seek him. And then he said, you know, he's not far from any of us. I love that. You can say that to someone. You know, you're not far from God. He's not far from you. You can say that to somebody because the Bible says that. And another thing he says is your own poets wrote about this. Do you think Paul sat around and all he did was write the Bible all day? No. Of course, he didn't know he was writing the Bible when he was writing the letters. No. He was reading poetry. He was reading secular, who knows what, philosophy. He knew what people on the street read and talked about. And so that's good for us to be into our culture, not seeped in our culture, but know what's going on in our culture that we can say, well, you know, just like the lyrics in this song say, you know, blah, 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 blah. Then you've got that. That's the poetry that you can tell people. All right, Ephesians 2, 1 and 2. Who will read that? Please.
As for you, you are dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live, and you followed the ways of this world, and are the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient.
Okay. What would be, your name is Mary?
Melly.
Thank you. I couldn't see from here. Melly, what are two or three descriptions of people without Christ in that passage? Or if somebody else also looked it up, you can shout it out.
First, they're dead in their transgressions and sins.
Okay. They're dead. Zombie. They're the walking, living dead. Okay. You're going down the street. You're going across campus and you're thinking, man, they're looking sharp. Ooh, they're looking good. Oh, they got on their cool t-shirt. Ooh, I like her hair. Oh, those shoes. Oh, diesel shoes. Man, I want to be some of those, you know. And you're looking at all this stuff and you're going, and they're looking pretty good. They're looking pretty alive. And God says, no, they're dead. They're the zombies. You know, it's like a scary movie. You are living in a scary movie, you know? And you look around and they kind of look at you, but don't let that fool you. That's not what they are. Look at the reality of what God says about them. What's another thing that says there, Melly?
Those who are disobedient.
Okay. They're disobedient. Anything else?
They follow the ways of the world and the ruler of the kingdom.
Okay. They're following the devil. They don't think they have a ruler. They're like, no, I just make my own decisions. You heard some of those videos this week. I just kind of make my own decisions. I don't let people tell me what to do. Oh, no. You have a ruler. Did you know that? It's the ruler who's the prince of this world. The enemy, the devil, is your ruler. I'm not going to tell that to somebody. But that helps me to key in. Because people look cool, and I get intimidated, you know. I'm hanging out with Zetas at TCU, and I'm thinking, oh, these girls, they look kind of sharp, you know, when I was leading a Bible study there at TCU. It's like, well, they may look sharp, but they're dead. They're really dead on the inside. You're alive, Martha. Keep that in mind. I remember hanging out with some students. I was going to, in Canada, and I was going to just a casual barbecue with a few friends and stuff. They were really tight friends from Catholic prep school. And I was like, well, you know, I didn't go to Catholic prep school. And I'm thinking, and some of them I was really good friends with, but I was like, you know, I like Johanna and I like those, you know, the other guy, but I don't know if I can really, like, I don't know if I'm going to click with these people, you know? And I'm in the car, and the Lord showed me the verse, owe no man anything but to love. And it's like, you know, you don't owe them a cute hairdo. You don't owe them that you got the best clothes or that you can talk about your Catholic prep school, how it was in Florida. You just owe them to love them at this party. You just go and hang out with some people at the barbecue. And that has really freed me up, going to situations where I feel uncomfortable, where I feel, because I'm like, who's going to love me? I'm going to go to the party. And I remember doing this with Leon, who was an atheist. And I was going to his birthday party, and I was like, again, I'm so nervous, and I'm older, and I'm not a student anymore, and what can I wear, and who am I going to hang out with when I get there, because I only know Leon, and it's like, you know what, Martha? You're going to love him. It's his birthday. So you just look for chances to serve him. So I thought, you know, talk to people. If you run out of something to talk about, you know, go stand in the corner and observe, you know, you learn by observing, and then, like, pick up some plates and wash some forks and stuff, and so I washed some forks, and you know, and I stayed a lot longer. I stayed there for hours. And I was thinking, okay, just go show up, you know, for about an hour. And, you know, God can really surprise us when we go to love people instead of getting our little self-image thing. You know, how can people love me? Okay. So the people around me are like a pond. That's my relatives, my friends, my classmates, my roommates, et cetera. I don't know who's going to respond. But the more people I know, I mean, we don't want to be superficial all over the place. But the more people I know, the bigger the chances are that I'm going to meet people who are going to be responsive to the gospel. Now, there are different concentric circles of concern. Have you heard of this book by Thompson? Concentric Circles of Concern, it's called. And it's talking about this is your very, very close family or friends, and then it moves out to colleagues and people at your sports club, and then person X. Sometimes it's easier to share the gospel with person X, because I don't have to ever see her again, than to share it with my uncle or something like that, you know? So we want to be careful that we balance that we are sharing with people that are close to us, as well as just random people. But this is an example of a random person that I met. Well, God's random, you know what I'm saying. God, I call it God's accidents. Katerina, I met Katerina. She came up to the taxi that I was getting out of when I was coming back from a trip. It was during the day last April. It was like the first of the semester. And she said, hey, excuse me, can you help me find, I think she's first talking to the taxi driver, and she said, can you help me find the street? I'm looking for my yoga class, and it's first day of class, and I don't know where it is. I go, well, you know, this is the street, and I've heard there's some sort of gym here, but I don't know where that little sports kind of gym thing is. But you take the initiative and you take the next step. So instead of just, oh, well, that was by chance, and I would just go, sorry, I can't help you. Take the next step. You think, this is no accident. So I said, hey, you could come into my apartment if you want to. I mean, all I can offer you is my phone, you know. So she says, okay. So we come into my apartment. I pull out the phone book. We're trying to call the directory for FSU. My campus is FSU, and, you know, try to find out where the building is and whatever. Again, take the next step, okay? She came into my apartment. You know, she seems like she's not, you know, scared to come to my room or whatever. So I said, you know, and she asked me what I did, and I didn't really get into, like, I was in the Christian thing. I just told her that I teach English at the university. And it wasn't I was hiding anything. She was in a hurry. And I do teach one class of English at the university. So I said, yeah, she said, well, I live really near here. And I said, oh, well, it's nice talking to you. Here's my phone number. I just wrote down my phone number or my email or something. I said, you know, call me sometime. And she goes, yeah, maybe we could have tea. And I said, that'd be great. So she didn't call. But again, I took the step and you take the next step. I didn't ask for her phone number. That's too personal. I just gave her mine. Okay. I ran into her a couple times. Hey, Katerina, ran into her on campus. Somehow we did exchange emails. finally she wrote me and was like, hey, I'm going to the, like, you know, spur of the moment. Hey, I'm going to the movies tonight. You want to come? And it was like, I was gone. So when I came back, I said, hey, I'm sorry. I got your email and I was out of town and I'm sorry. So whatever, we finally hooked up in the summer. So this is from April till the summer. We went out to the Wagner Gasse, which is kind of a pub, cafe, street. And we sat outside in the cafe and immediately sensed there was spiritual interest. So I drew out the bridge illustration for her on a napkin or a piece of paper or something. And she was very open, but she was like, it's interesting, but this is totally new to me. I know nothing about this. I know nothing about Christianity. So it's like, okay, that's cool. She started coming to our Bible study, et cetera. Hung around with her. And I'd been to her house, also her little apartment, too. And anyway, one night, I had come in from another trip in January. This is this January. 9 p.m. at night, put on my sweatpants, was going to make some pasta because I was starving. Long day on the train, and I was like, whew, not answering the phone. The phone rings, I'm like, don't get it. You know, my cell phone rings, don't get it. And so I'm like, whatever. The doorbell rings, and it's Katerina. And she comes to the door, she goes, can you pray with me? And I thought, oh, no. It's boyfriend problems again, you know, because she and I had talked about boyfriend problems before, and I had said one time to her, well, can I just pray with you, you know? And she's like, okay. So I prayed for her boyfriend problems, you know? And I thought, it's boyfriend problems again. I'm just, like, so tired. I'm just like, you know, I need my space or whatever. So invite her in, of course, and I noticed on her arm she had little blood marks where she'd been scratching herself, and I don't know what all that's from, but anyway, she was having some emotional struggles. And I said, what is this, Katerina? And we did talk about boyfriend problems and stuff. And I thought, you know, let's just cut to the chase. I said, you know, Katerina, I really don't know how to help you. I said, you really need a relationship with Jesus Christ. He's the only one that can be your forever friend. And she said, well, that's why I wanted to pray with you. And I was like, ding. Well, I thought you meant just, you know, can you pray for me? And she goes, well, remember you said, blah, 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 like so many months ago, if I were ever ready, because I ask people if they're not, I always ask them, my dad said, always ask them to buy. When I share the gospel, I always say, would you like to make that decision today? Because Jesus says today's the day of salvation. I'll go, why don't you think about that? I let them tell me they need to think about it. Even when I know they need to think about it, I always say, would you like to make that decision right now? And she said, remember I told you no, and you said, but if you ever did, you know, and I needed help, I could come to you, even if it was midnight. And I was like, did I say that? Was I crazy? You know? And she said, yeah. And so I knew you had said, I could just come right over and you'd pray with me. And I said, well, of course. And then I was a little nervous, like, does she understand? So I went over the gospel a little bit more with her. Just make sure, you know, this wasn't I'm trying to be saved from my boyfriend problems. I really want to know Jesus. And so we talked and she did. She prayed to save Christ and she's gotten involved in our group some more and comes to church every Sunday, and it's just like, wow, you know. But that was a random person. Now, tell me, how hard did I work for that? How hard did I work to bump into somebody on the street when I was getting out of a taxi? How hard did I work to send her like 50 emails to say, let's get together? No, I didn't send her 50 emails. I put the ball in her court. Okay, we bumped into each other. We kind of talked. Was that hard? Was that hard to give her my phone number? No. Was it hard to invite her to my apartment? Did that take a lot? Oh, gosh, it was such a risk. I was just so nervous. You know, no. Was it hard to sit there when she already expressed spiritual interest for sitting in a cafe to draw out the bridge illustration? That was a little harder. Okay, that was a little, that took, you know, more. I had to think. I had to have it memorized and stuff. You know, was it hard to invite her? No. That was easy, you guys. It is not possible for you not to be a fisher of men. Now, I won't be the only link in the chain, but it is not possible for you not to be around an environment where people are coming to Christ if you are following Jesus. Matthew 4:19. Okay, so how large was Jesus' pond? Jesus' pond, the 12 every day. Mary and Lazarus and Martha, his friends, and he had strangers and acquaintances. 1 Corinthians 9:19-24. Who will read that? Okay. Good. I'll almost stop you there. Thank you, Courtney. Okay, so what did Paul say he was trying to do with these different spectrums of society? I hope to blank them. Okay, he wanted to become like them. Good. And his goal for them was that he could what them? He wants to save them. He wants to win them. He used the win. Look, Courtney, how many times has he used the word win there? Do you see in that passage? He wants to win them. Does win sound threatening? Does that sound like Bible thumping? Does that sound like aggressive evangelism? You know, if a guy's trying to win a girl's heart, do you just go, get away? You know, does that sound like scary? Or does that sound like John 6:44? Jesus said that the Father draws all men unto him. So the other verse said in Acts, he's that we're seeking God, but the reality is God is drawing. No one can come to the Father, Jesus said, unless the Father who sent me draws him. Drawing. You know, you're not going out there deep sea fishing and you're like, come on, baby. Ooh, ooh. You know, those big old sea fish kind of things. Come on, I'm going to yank you out of the water. It's just a kind of just reeling in. You know, it's just really this wooing, drawing. You know, come to me. Come to me, Jesus says. And that's the way that our evangelism can be. Okay, so what if somebody says, are you trying to convert me, Martha? I have people say, what are you doing? Are you like here to convert me? I'll say, no, I can't do that. I say, but I will say, I've taught school before. I live in Germany now and do work with a Christian group. Whatever I do, I go to the store. My purpose in life is to know God and to help other people know him better. So no matter what I'm doing, yeah, my hope is that everyone will come to know God better or come to know him for the first time. So that is what my life is about, my whole life. So it's not my job, that's my life. So that's what I answer people. Now, to the Jews, Paul said, you know, if your cultural ethnicity is the Jews, I'm a Jew. I can talk like the Jews. I can talk your language. I can eat the stuff you eat. We don't eat pork. Oh my gosh, that's terrible. You know, he can do the Jew thing. You know, Paul did that. So when you get around people that have a certain cultural ethnicity, you want to be sensitive. Your friend that gives you a Quran, you would put the Quran where it is not between two books, because that's offensive. The Quran needs to stay alone, stand alone, or it needs to be on the shelf outside. It needs to be on the outside. That's just a little cultural sensitivity thing, you know. When I worked with students at SC, some of the girls that I worked with played on the basketball team. I never played on the basketball team. I'm tall, but I didn't play, okay? So, and of course, they're like professionals. So what do? I went to all the basketball games. I got the comp tickets, you know, if they gave me comp tickets. I went to basketball games all over the place, you know. When I hung out with them, do you think I wore my little preppy clothes? Oh, no, I'm just wearing my sweatpants, everything like they are, just hanging out, you know, and I'm getting my cool, like, whatever, Reeboks or Adidas or whatever, you know. They would say, hey, I like your, you know, your new tennis shoes or whatever. I'm like, well, thank you, you know. I mean, that's where they're at, that's where I'm at. And you go, well, Martha, are you like, you don't know who you are and you're trying to change up for everybody? No, I frankly like to dress comfortable. I have different sides of me, and you do too. Paul said, hey, when I'm at the Jews, I am Jewish. I like doing the Jewish thing, you know? So I like hanging out. I listen to hip-hop music, and that's what we did. You know, that's I hung out with them, okay? But at the same time, I could hang out with Allison, and he said, you know, to those without the law, I could be without the law. I don't know what they smoked when I wasn't around, but it probably wasn't, you know, tobacco. Well, man, they smoked tobacco when I was around. So I hung out with Allison, who was a Christian. Her friends were not. They were like, I would call alternative, but alternative could be a lot of things, you know. That's the kind of people you want to kind of wear your Doc Martens around, okay? So I could, like, do that, too. And I could wear, like, a lot of black. I like black. You know, I can wear black. So, you know, I would like, and then you would go, but again, it's not like, well, Martha, you need to just be yourself. Well, I am myself, but I like to dress comfortable. I also like to, you know, dress black. I mean, there's different sides to me. I can be with people that are without law, and I don't have to, like, cram Christianity down their throat, you know. I can share Christ. One of those girls I used to hang out with was her roommate, Daria, that would leave the apartment, not the room. She would leave the apartment when we would have our Bible study with Allison. The way I won her to friendship was being around her, and then finally I thought, what do you have in common with her? She writes poetry. You write a little bit of poetry. And I said, hey, do you want to hang out sometime? We'll just read poetry together. And we were like, yeah. So we, you know, read each other's poetry and stuff. She's now my webmaster or web mistress. That means she knows exactly what my entire ministry is about, stuff that I would not normally want non-believers to read. But she's cool with that, and she's still not a believer, but that's Daria, and she's my friend from SC, you know. So God can use those opportunities. Weak people hang out with weak people. Maybe the weak people on your campus are international students. They're kind of off-footing, and they're not really sure how things work here. Then befriend international students. That's the weak people. All right, 2 Corinthians 5, 11 and 14. Mm-hmm, Ben?
Therefore, knowing the fear of the Lord, we persuade men, but we are made manifest to God, and I hope that we are made manifest also in your consciences. In verse 14, for the love of Christ controls us, having concluded this, that one died for all, therefore all died.
Okay, what does it say? The love of Christ what?
Controls us.
Controls us. One version says impels us, okay? It's God's love. That's my motivator. You know, it's God's love. That's what I'm going to people with because I love him to death and I want to love him to Jesus. And he used that word again. We seek to persuade people. The Berkeley Version says to win people. Again, it's not that, you know, you're thinking, I can't evangelize because, you know, I'm just going to be so aggressive and, you know, people won't like me. Well, they may not like you. That's true. But I don't have to, like, Bible thump them. You know, I can win them. I can persuade them. I can love them. Okay. Now, let's talk about some of the specifics for developing a ministry lifestyle. I want to switch to something that's not on your notes, okay? Because I don't want to leave it till the end. I don't want to leave it. When you actually have a cell group, what you do during the group, and then I'm going to come back to forming the team, okay? I'm going to come back to forming the team, belonging and believing. But I want to go to the nitty-gritty of what you do during an outreach Bible study. First of all, the first week is some kind of a hangout time, play games, or what we do, we kick off the semester with a party. Now, you may have a BSU party. I don't know if you do a kick off the semester BSU party. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about whoever you're trying to reach, if it's the dorm or whatever, you're having a floor party. Think of a theme. You know, do a no pasta with basta night, you know, where everyone brings a sauce, or everyone brings a noodle, you know, noodles, and then you put it together. Do a Valentine's theme. Do who knows what theme. We're going to do a hat party when we get back. Just anything with a theme is really fun. I do that. Now, you may say, now, we have no program for parties. Parties have no programs. There's no testimony. There's no devotions. If we invite people to a party, it is just talking or games or hanging out or, you know, crazy name tags or whatever. We only invite them. We tell them what we're inviting them to. There's no surprises, okay? Then, if you're saying, now, I want to do a step further, I need to have kind of a night that's a little bit more casual, you could do that. Where you say, well, the next, you know, and give out invitations at your party, little invitations. We're starting this series on risk for 3 weeks. Or we're starting a 4-week series on a Christianity crash course. Or we're starting a 2-week series on money management and greed, you see. Or you do one on war and politics, who knows. And we're starting this little series, we hand out the invitation, and it's going to be at the same place where the party is. You see, they want them to get used to that room or that wherever. You want to get at the same place. And then you say, that first week, you might want to do it a little casual. You might say, well, next week, we're going to have, maybe you didn't do the pasta party. Maybe you say, Mexican salad night. Everybody brings something. Or we're going to have, I don't know, some sort of, you know, dessert night that, you know, you bring the popcorn and you bring the M&Ms and you bring the raisins and you bring the nuts and we put it all together and make this big old, you know, thing. Put something fun, like a game, or put something like eating in there or drinking, and then have a light Bible study for maybe like 20 minutes or something. I use the Serendipity Bible. I love that book. I think you have some at the BSU, at least at OU. Do you know, who knows the Serendipity Bible? It's by Coleman. Oh my goodness. This is the best tool you've ever discovered. This helps you write Bible studies. It has the Bible, then has all these margin questions, and then some they pull out and they make this whole little question and answer Bible study. It always has an icebreaker question or two, then has a few questions about the text that are easy to answer, some with opinions, some more about the facts. Then it has application questions, heart questions about your life. Okay? It's what I call Bible Light. You know, like Bud Light? This is Bible Light. It's not a lot of calories. It's not a real, like, ooh, overfilling. I feel like I've got so much Bible. This is for non-believers, okay? This is for non-believers. Now, I always give them a sheet. I put question and answers on the sheet. Does two things. You go, oh, but they're going to read ahead. No, 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 no. It helps you to lead better than if you only have the stuff in front of you. Why? Because they know you're going somewhere. So if they go on a rabbit trail, you go, wow, guys, you know, I think we need to go ahead and get to question 5. And they know that there is a question 5. If they don't have a sheet in front of them, they don't know. You've got 12 questions. You've got 3 questions. So they're just talking out the blue storm. And then you go, I think we need to get on. Oh, okay. And then the sheet helps you facilitate. I do it more facilitative style. And I don't give a lot of personal Bible knowledge. I don't go, well, in my quiet time. And my students don't do that either, my Christian students. Well, in my quiet time in Job this morning, you know, I really felt like God showed me so-and-so. And I think that would really convince you to come to Christ. Oh, my goodness. You just, like, pulled out all kind of jargon on them. Your Christians need to be trained. They don't do that. We are there. Now, they will sometimes, you know, someone will say, well, I just really don't see any evidence for the resurrection. Then I'll kind of wait, and I'll see if one of the Christian students says, well, you know, I think there's a couple things that really convince me. But they don't pull out their whole apologetic thing. They just maybe say a couple things, but keep it really light. Because then you start to feel like there's the us and the them. And remember, we want people to belong, all right? It's discussion-oriented. All opinions are welcome. I tell them that. All opinions are welcome, but we are basing it on the Bible. We always have a Bible text that we go through. A parable or a story of Jesus' life is what we start off with the Gospels. On the sheet, it not only has Luke chapter 11, verses 23 through 25. It says page 325. It always has the page number. Now, don't assume anything, because we had one guy, Dirk, opens it up, page 325. He goes, and I'm starting in. You know, who will read the first question? Oh, I don't. I talk as little as possible. Let them read the questions. You have to be a Christian to read the questions? No. Let them do as much as they can. So who will read question one? Someone reads question one. And then they go, okay. And then he goes, wait, I don't understand. Okay, I'm on page 325. Now, where are we? And I go, my bad. I am so sorry. Yeah, you are right. Okay, now there's a big 11 on the left column there. And then under that, there's a small little 23. We're going to start right there on that line with that small 23. So be careful about assuming things about people. That's why I give page numbers. What else? Let wrong answers go. You know, Jesus is just, I think he's just a charismatic cult leader. Thank you, Rocco. Interesting comment. Anybody else? You know, just, I mean, see, the Bible is convincing them. I'm hoping they're going to come back. I'm not trying to give it all to them in 1 week. It's a process. They're going to need to read the Bible and digest it for themselves. Okay. And I keep it simple to train new leaders, because they go, well, gosh, Martha's just sort of facilitating a group. I mean, it's not that complicated. And she got the answer from the Serendipity Bible. Boy, is that all she is? And she's my leader. She gets the answer. She gets the question. Yeah. Because if I do it, you can do it too. You see? I mean, I do. I change it up and stuff. But I want to keep it simple to train my new leaders. And then every few weeks, we always take a break. We say, okay, about 4 weeks into it, well, we need to have another party. Or we need to go to a restaurant. Or we need to do something together. So we always, that gives people a lot of entry and exit points where they feel like, okay, I was there for 3 weeks, but I'm out. Or, oh, you're doing a new series. Okay, I'm back in. Any questions so far? Questions? Okay, I'm going to run through belonging. All right. Initiate. Think like them. Be a learner. Gather believers as the core first, and then ride on their friends. Build a team. Klaus Schoenberg, I always thought of a team as, you know, a leader and an assistant leader, as the two people to lead that Bible study. Klaus Schoenberg says he has a team of three: an evangelist, someone that's really good with sharing the gospel; a shepherd, someone that's really good at just taking care of people, talking with people about their needs, nurturing people; and a host or a hostess, someone that doesn't even have to worry about planning the study, maybe not even a whole lot of worried about inviting people. Of course, you want to invite people, but they're worried about making sure that there's some Cokes there and the apartment is clean or whatever. So get a host or a hostess that maybe doesn't have some other responsibilities. And the host or a hostess could be a what, guys? A non-Christian, of course. Okay, then pray. John 16:8 says that there's three things the Holy Spirit convicts of. So I pray, God, Holy Spirit, would you convict them of sin, that they're lost without you? Would you convict them of righteousness, that the believers have something good in them that they would like? And convict them of judgment, that there's a payday someday. What Scott in Berlin says, a colleague of mine in Berlin, he says he looks for three things. This is his way of starting a whole new ministry. He looks for the person of peace. That's the person that maybe lives on your floor that you go, yeah, I hang out with the girls, but everybody always likes going to her room or whatever. A person of peace. Or if you move to a new city, you're looking for a person of peace. That's someone that you click with. I think that's Matthew 10. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's in Matthew 10 is the person of peace. This is the person that opens their home to you, that says, hey, I invite you into my world. All right? Through this person, you're not just trying to witness to him or her. You're trying to witness to the pathway. Third P is the pathway of relationships that they have. So you're saying, not just, hey, can you come to Bible study? Do you have any other friends that might be wanting to investigate who Jesus is and how God is relevant to our lives? Get in on their pathway of relationships. And then third is power. Watch for the power of the Holy Spirit in that situation. All right, get in on their turf. Where do they hang out? The cafeteria or the pizza place? Or go to neutral places for them, not always inviting them to your Christian places or your BSU or something. Cook at their place. I had Nadine and Jessica. Jessica was a Christian that was an exchange student, and she had a roommate, Nadine. And it's like, you know, Jessica, how can I get to know Nadine better? And I said, you know what? I want to come over to you guys' house to eat. I just invited myself over. I said, I'll make quiche. What do you guys want to make? I said, okay, I'll make quiche, you make salad. They had me over in their little room. You know, we had dinner together. And then what do I do? I'm in Nadine's world, then through Nadine, I meet her roommate. Okay, I need to say this. Guys and girls live together, and it's not, and it is platonic a lot of times, so the dorms put people in apartments together, guys and girls. So I met one of her roommates, Dirk. Then I get to witness to Dirk. Nadine came to Christ. Dirk hasn't yet, still praying for that guy. But I'm getting in on their world, on their turf. Then arrange opportunities. Stefan, that's here this week from Germany, he said, Mikael, he really liked those muffins that you made for my birthday party. He wants the recipe. Yes or no, did I give him the recipe right away? Take the next step. No, I'm not giving him the recipe. I'm inviting him over. I said, Stefan, he didn't need the recipe. He needs to learn to bake muffins. Because, he doesn't have the right form, the muffin forms for him. And he needs to see how I do it. So you guys find out if Mikael wants to come over and we'll bake him together. See? Then I get to meet his friend. What I'm doing, I'm building a canal between Stefan's pond, Mikael's and Stefan's pond, and my pond. We're overlapping our worlds, okay? So Mikael is becoming my friend, not just Stefan's friend. Okay. Let people serve you. Jesus said to the woman at the well, I have water to give you. No, he said, I'm thirsty. Could you give me some water? John 4. He let someone serve him. We think, Christians are supposed to serve everybody. We are. But just because, who are you going to ask when you need a ride to Oklahoma City to the airport? A non-Christian, of course. That's the first person you're going to try to go for because you want them to serve you. You think, I can't do that. I feel so bad about that. But you have no problem serving them, right? Oh, yeah, because Jesus wants it. Jesus is our example. He let people serve him. You see, that's the idea. I have something to give you. I am the Christian missionary, and you are the learner, and I will do something at you. No, I am a learner. I need to learn so much from you. I know nothing about whatever you're into, and you just let that non-Christian friend help you with that, or serve you. All right. Let people serve you. I've got a whole story about this guy. I can't even tell you. Ask me later about Matt's. It's a great story. He helped me find a radio, and he came to Christ. So, find common interest, okay? And if you don't have common interest, be a learner and ask them to introduce you to their world. Sven and Susie. Susie's really into plants. Everybody knows. If your plant's dying, give it to Susie. Sven and Susie are sort of like pre-engaged, live together, kind of thing. And so I went to the botanical gardens with them. Botanical gardens. And she's going, that's a so-and-so, so-and-so. That's a so-and-so. That's what she's into. So, I'm developing an interest. My dad learned opera because he was with this guy that every Saturday he'd listen to opera on the radio. And Dad really wasn't into it. I mean, I've gone to opera with my dad before, but he's not into opera. But Dad said, hey, this guy's into opera. I'm into opera. Okay? So he developed an interest and the guy came to Christ. Always widen or increase the loop or the pond network. You're increasing the pond network. I'm building a canal between my pond and your pond and your pond, Amanda, and we're all, so your friends become my friends. I mean, the goal is that I could call one of your friends that I met through you, and now I can call her or him by myself. You don't need to be around. I would do something alone with them. Then you know you've really connected your ponds. Okay. Team up with other Christians or figure out who they would click with. I know this one person. I don't really totally click with him because he's an engineering major. But this guy in the BSU, he's an engineering major. Maybe we can all go to the movies together. You see, I'm trying to click people that would click together. Sometimes I use invitations, like I said, for events. Give them a little invitation. Because sometimes Christians find it easy to give an invitation to somebody versus just say, hey, do you want to come over? Combine food with anything. Use themes. Matthew 11:19, Jesus was accused of being a glutton and a drunkard. Why? Because he was around a lot of people that were probably drunk or overeating. He wasn't, but he was around people like that, okay? So risk your reputation to be able to get out there, and food is good, okay? So food is good. So advertise what you're serving. I'm not just having, come over, we're making pasta. No, we're having a no pasta with pasta night. See, it's an event. I learned that from Hope. We are not just having a Jesus film. We're going to watch the Jesus video. How boring. No, we're going to have arroz con pollo because I grew up with Cubans in Florida, and so I'm going to make Spanish rice and beans. I mean, Spanish rice and chicken, you see? So we're all going to have arroz con pollo, which is from my home culture, and then we're going to have the Jesus video. See, make it interesting with food. Be careful about formalizing too soon. Our group was just our group. We didn't have a name. Our group is called Now Connection in Germany, but we didn't have a name for 2 years. it's okay to have it before 2 years, but that's how God worked in our life. The point was, then they started saying, are you in Martha's group? And I was like, no, I don't think I want it to be my group. So then we have a name now. But be careful about formalizing where it's a BSU event. Why don't you just go with some friends and I, we're hanging out. You see, if you formalize, you can scare people off. And discover your evangelism style. Willow Creek talks about that. Okay. Believing. Discover who is ripe. R-I-P-E. Under believing. R is for relationships with Christians. People are more ready, they're more ripe to accept Christ when they have more relationships with Christians. I, if you see an interest in God in the Bible, I for interest in God in the Bible, they respond after they've been to a Christian event, or they respond after they've heard you share your testimony or give the gospel. In other words, you filtered through and they're still interested. All right? P, problems in life. We all know this. When people have problems, they are more ready to say, you know what, my world system isn't working. I need another worldview. Problems in life, and E, encounters. Encounters. Who keeps coming to mind to pray for? Who do you keep running into on campus? There's a reason you are encountering them. Okay? Team up with other people. Learn to change the direction of a conversation towards spiritual things. Use spiritual potato chips. Okay. Tim? Would you like one?
Sure.
Okay. Good. Go ahead. Eat it up. Little Pringles here. You're not hungry?
Not really.
Oh, well, give it to somebody else. Give it to Matt. She's looking for Pringle? Eat it up there, Matt. How's it taste? Good. Now, did I say, Matt, would you like to know about the greatest thing that ever happened to me? You know, and pour the whole Pringles on his head? No. I just give him one little spiritual potato chip and just salt him, see if he's interested. I identify with Christ. I say, you know, sometime I ought to tell you how my life really changed through a relationship with Jesus Christ. Use sometime a lot. Sometime is very good. You know, sometime it'd be really interesting for us to like maybe read who Jesus is all about. Maybe just read a little bit in the Bible and just see who Jesus really was, you know, in John, in the Gospel of John. Sometime, you know, or say, identify with Christ. Oh, I am so upset right now. But, you know, compared to before I committed my life to Christ, I mean, if something like this had happened to me 2 months ago before I committed my life to Christ, I would have been, like, in bed for 2 days. I'm very upset, but I can't believe I'm handling it like this. Did you share the whole gospel? No. You just identified with Christ. You showed your ID at the door. And then you see a spiritual potato chip. You just throw it out and you see if they want another one. All right? Talk about Christ early in every relationship, not later. And then that filters through. If they don't want to hang out with you, you go, As soon as we do that, the opposite. Have 2 or 3 ways to share the gospel, then do it. Use special events like a big question night. We'll have a big question night. We'll have some of our students in Canada called it Pizza and God. We would just have a bunch of pizza, and then we'd say the topic for the evening is, everybody bring your friends, topic for the evening is, why is there evil and suffering in the world? And we'd have a 25-minute talk, and then we'd have discussion. Something like that, some of these apologetic topics. And then share the gospel using a New Testament or a pen and paper if possible. It seems less contrived. If you use a booklet, booklets are really good to learn on. But if you just have a pen, I come, I'm sharing the gospel, and I'm saying, Tim, could I show you this illustration that describes the relationship between God and people and how Jesus Christ fits into that? Tim says, okay. I mean, it'll be about 15 minutes or something if you'd be interested. Okay. Well, do you have a piece of paper I could use? You know, and if I've got the verses memorized, very low key. Even though I knew, I'm going with Katerina to the Wagner Gasse, and I hope I can share the bridge illustration. But sometimes you've got to decide if you want to bring your Bible or not. And it just seems less contrived. Okay, what I want you to do is, I want you to get in groups of 4, and I'm going to give you a case study. So go ahead and get it. Turn your chairs around quickly. Get good. I'm going to give you a case study, and I want you to figure out, using these principles, how would you start a ministry here? Okay. Turn your chair. You guys do number 1. You guys could do case 2. We need to get about 4 people. Case 3. Case 4. Case 1. Okay.
Invite them to your friends. Invite your friends with them. Get them involved.
Mix your ministry ponds. Good. What would you be cautious about? Be cautious about being overly friendly. Anne Harrington, who's a church planner with her husband out in San Diego, she taught me this at Hope. She said, you get around the Christian community, everybody's so friendly and so helpful, you can overwhelm people. So I've had to learn sometimes when I meet people for the first time, be a little bit aloof, maybe. You know, good to meet you. Oh, well, maybe I could, you know, but not over like, well, tonight I could take you to Walmart, and tomorrow you could come to dinner, and then Thursday night we have this, and they just kind of go, whoa, you know? Yes?
That just seems kind of weird, manipulative.
Yeah. Okay. Number two, what was a good, what, give us a couple ideas for case study two. What'd you think?
We thought that maybe they would need to meet some of your other Christian friends, because maybe some of the ways that you're communicating, you know, somebody else would be able to relate to them in a different way that'll maybe get across better.
Really key idea. Thanks, Melissa. What else for number two?
You obviously keep praying for them, you keep hanging out with them, keep serving them.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're still listening, you keep sharing the gospel with them.
Good, Ben. How about case study three? Oh, go ahead.
You can push the counselors and get other ideas how to approach them.
That's good. Get some counsel. That's excellent. Case study three, basketball team. Or what was that? Basketball team? Yeah.
Well, as far as, like, getting to know them on a more personal level, we thought, of course, we have this common ground with basketball. We could, like, maybe just take it a little further and go, let's go out to dinner or something like that afterward. I'm really hungry. And also, just maybe if we want some one-on-one time, asking them if we could get help on certain, like,
get help on basketball moves. I like that. Something else on number three, case study three.